On this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks, I sit down with Todd Solzinger to uncover the benefits of fund-to-funds investing.
Hey, Mavericks. This is Ava Baukamp, and this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks is brought to you by Legacy Impact Investors. We are an industrial investment firm located in cash flow country, the Midwest. We strive to shield off risk and beat inflation, all while producing predictable cash flow. We curate real estate investment opportunities for busy professionals and other real estate investors seeking passive income. To learn more about what we do and connect with me, go to www.legacyimpactinvestors.com.
Maverick, noun, unusual person, a visionary, leader, go-getter, an independent thinker. They see the vision for their life and pull that future towards them with an unyielding belief that things can and must be better. They achieve what most won't. Innovative, influential, daring, and direct, with a remarkably high tolerance for taking calculated risk. A foe to the status quo. This is Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks. Your host, Neil Timmons, has been involved with over $300 million in real estate transactions. He's a published author, commercial property investor, and real estate syndicator. This show is for those who want to learn how to earn passive income through real estate investing. Now, here's your host, Neil Timmons.
Welcome to Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks, where we provide you actionable steps to grow your passive income and become job optional. During this episode, you're going to get to discover the benefits of fund-to-fund investing. Now, for those of you who are new, I'm your host, Neil Timmons. I love passive income from real estate. Now, before I introduce you to today's Maverick, I want to make a request. If you like what you hear, well, give us a thumbs up. Be certain to subscribe to the show. Never miss a valuable episode. And if you love what you hear, well, give us a written review. Plus, be sure to look at the description of this episode. We packed it with thousands of dollars in free resources. Now, today, we've got the privilege to learn from a person who is intensely involved in fund-to-fund investing. And just before that, he was a general partner himself doing his own deals. Prior to his career in real estate, he was a financial advisor. I would describe today's Maverick as a patient investor. Today's Maverick, I've got Todd Solzinger here with me. Todd, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Neil. It's great to be here.
For the audience's sake, who are you? Where are you from? What do you do?
Yeah, so Todd Solzinger, I run a company called Blue Elm Investments. I'm based in Northern California, about halfway between San Francisco and San Jose, and been investing in real estate for about 10 plus years and had my business for about the last four.
Take me back to the beginning. Tell me about the very first commercial property that you invested in or you bought.
Yeah, so when I started my syndication business, I was looking into a lot of different asset classes, self-storage, mortgage notes, and mobile home parks. And I was really intrigued by mobile home parks. I was listening to a lot of podcasts and educating myself about them. It was a little bit less frenzied to get into that space. And so I ended up buying two mobile home parks, a mile and a half from each other in Georgia. So 71 spaces total. Mobile home park space, again, kind of get into the lower entry point. So it was $825,000 for a 71 space park in Georgia.
Incredible. What were lot rents back then?
Well, that was kind of the interesting thing about this property. It was owned by a guy for almost 20 years. He was only accepting cash from his tenants. Okay. So probably wasn't reporting all of his income. It was my guess. Yep. So he had one person that he was charging $50 a month to, and he had a couple people he was charging $200. Just for no good reason other than, oh, gee, this one at $50. I think she's an alcoholic, he says, and I don't know if she's going to live much longer. And I've just kept her at $50 for the last 10 years.
My heavens. Huh?
Right.
How did you end up finding that deal?
When I was doing my initial research, I was kind of doing a lot of searching on LoopNet, Crexy, and calling mobile home park brokers. There's some commercial brokers that have mobile home parks periodically for sale. And then there's other people that specialize in mobile home parks. And this one I actually found through a company called the Mobile Home Park Broker. Mm. And they had it listed in kind of mom and pop ownership. And the property had fallen out of escrow a couple times over the last year. So the price had come down a little bit. And the biggest reason was it was really hard to get bank financing for it. Sure. Because he was only accepting cash. So there was no link between receipts and bank statements and tax returns. So that was something we tried to leverage to our advantage.
So financing. So tell me a little more about that. How did you end up putting that thing together and closing on it?
Yeah, we started talking to some banks and mortgage brokers about how we could finance it. And again, that was difficult based on the situation. The seller did not want to carry back a note himself. But through the due diligence process, we approached him because we were getting close to the end of our due diligence period to say, hey, I think the only way we're going to get this thing closed is if you'll finance it for us. And so he agreed to carry back a note for us. And the interesting thing about being able to do seller financing is there's really no rules. So like with this guy in particular, he said, well, you know, I've got a small mortgage on the property of a couple $100,000. I'd like a little bit of cash out. So how about we make it $300,000 down? So again, no exact percentage or loan to value or anything. And then we were trying to figure out kind of the terms. And he said, oh, yeah, I kind of need about $2,500 a month income just, you know, from the property would be nice. So from that, we just backed into an interest rate of 5.8%, interest only for 4 years. And that's how we structured it. So not something that you would ever go to a bank with and try to like make up your own terms, but with seller financing, you have the flexibility to do that.
Wide open. Anything you can dream up, you can do.
Exactly.
What did you end up doing with that property, or do you still own it today?
We actually ended up selling it last year. You know, the good part about got it at a decent price, and we were able to start going in and bringing rents a little bit closer to market. We brought in a few refurbished used homes into some of the vacant lots. The downside was we bought that property at the end of 2019, just going into COVID.
Yep.
So Georgia, which is typically a pretty landlord-friendly state, all of a sudden wasn't because the courts were closed and we couldn't evict people. So we had some people that I think at the long end was 15 plus months or so where they didn't pay rent and we couldn't do anything about it. So we were really stuck. So we struggled for a while to kind of make it through COVID. The market worked in our favor in terms of pricing, values, and mobile home parks going up. So we exited that deal middle of 2022.
Okay, got it. Tell me about the most recent deal you did or were involved with.
Yeah, sure. So the first couple of deals I did, I was the sole general partner or did joint ventures with people. I decided I wanted to kind of focus more on fund to funds model in a lot of ways, because that was what I enjoyed doing, was talking to investors, bringing deals to my investors that they wouldn't have access to otherwise, and having kind of me spend the time going to conferences, talking to people, and finding good operators and good markets. So I did two deals this year for some apartments in Dallas. So I worked with a company called Rise 48 based in Phoenix, and they've recently moved into the Dallas market. And the fund of funds model, it's great because I can go to a company like Rise and come in with a much larger check. So I'm pulling money from quite a few investors together into their deals, which means I get better terms. I can pass those along through to my investors. So I really like it. It's a win-win for everybody.
Tell me more about that fund to fund model. You have your own fund, essentially, just like it sounds. You've got your own fund. Instead of an investor going off and talking to 5 or 10 or who knows how many different general partners, people like me, you do that work. You go off to these conferences, you plug into the economic data, you decide what markets you want to participate in and the people you want to do business with, and instead of somebody else.
Yes. Yeah. And from my investor standpoint, it looks, in some ways it can look a little bit similar to them. Like I presented an opportunity to them, say, hey, I found this mobile home park or RV park in 2022 as well. But in this case, just a little bit of a twist to it. It's like, this isn't a deal that I found or negotiated, whatever, but something that I found another operator. And then what I'm bringing to them is known this operator for a long time. They've got a good track record. They're in a different market than maybe I've presented to my investors, and they're much bigger. They've got in-house property management, asset management, construction management, all those things. So that was kind of good benefit to my investors would be to say, hey, Todd, like we know and trust you, and we've invested in your deals in the past. You're bringing us access to this other person that, again, kind of you've done the work to vet them and understand that they can meet their commitments.
Talk to me about doing the work. You've talked to a number of people. What kind of questions are you asking? How do you get to a spot where it becomes not just a person, it's a person you're going to invest in? What types of questions are you asking? And what do you have to know, need to know in order to move forward with somebody?
Yeah, a lot of times it's kind of watching from afar for a year or two, or maybe investing directly, passive investor, as well as being an active investor through my retirement accounts. So in some cases, it's kind of investing with them, finding out how they perform and what their communication style is and how they treat their investors. And then it's a lot of reference checking, kind of observe people from afar, kind of follow their deals, get on their email list, and then talk to other people that have either invested with them or potentially done fund-to-fund models with them. Again, just to find out how do they treat their investors and their fund managers. And yeah, so kind of the reference checking is really important. And then talking to the operators, finding out some of the things that we kind of talked about was, what's your communication cadence? I think that's one of the things when I first started investing passively, and before I started investing actively, I invested passively in syndications. And early on, I invested with a couple of sponsors who just, you know, the communication was really poor. It was not frequent enough. And then when things didn't go well, they didn't do as good a job as I thought they could have done in terms of keeping investors apprised. So I got kind of samples from the sponsors to say, like, this is how we communicate. This is a sample report. We do it on this on a monthly basis. We do this on a quarterly basis. We issue K-1s to our investors by kind of typically this time after the end of the year. So those are some of the things that I checked out with them.
So you check them out, a lot of reference checking. It's a full understanding of what they do and how they do it and really the content of their character.
Right.
Past that, you get presented with a deal, an actual project, a property. And then some of these you probably love and some maybe you pass on.
Yeah.
All right. So tell me, you love the operator, great. And then you're going to look at in a particular property now. What makes that property an opportunity that you go, yes, this is one I want to move forward with inside the fund?
Yes, yes. Well, it's funny, you know, it's very similar in some ways, not too different than when you're a GP, get a deal that you're thinking about investing and buying directly. So, you know, you look at the underwriting, you look at the projections, does this make sense? So my corporate background was in finance and financial planning and analysis. So I'd take a deep dive in underwriting models from the sponsors to see if I think they make sense. Does the exit cap rate make sense in terms of, you know, what they think they'll be able to sell this property for? Does the kind of revenue growth assumptions and expense growth assumptions make sense? I did see some deals from Rise and for some of their Phoenix properties of prior year that, yeah, I just didn't feel comfortable with. So I kind of have it from a lens of, hey, when I invest in this passively, and then that has to be pretty strong for me to think it's something worthwhile bringing to my investors.
Are you a passive real estate investor seeking financial freedom? Well, today's market's unique and it's ever changing. Now is the time to get educated on how to strategically invest in commercial real estate for long-term financial freedom. Grab your copy of How to Passively Invest in a Changing Economic Environment. Go to www.mavericksinvest.com.
Sure.
So you passed on a couple of things. What makes you pass? Or what in particular in Phoenix, what was it that was taking place in the environment or on that particular property that had you skip that one?
Yeah, you know, Phoenix is a great market. There was tons of job growth there, population growth. The couple of deals I remember looking at through them, it was kind of the price per door started to be too high that it made you feel a little uncomfortable, kind of the current acquisition price per door and then what the projections were. And there's probably kind of round numbers, but I think I remember looking at a deal, they're going to exit this thing at $400,000 or $450,000 a door 5 years from now. I thought, God, does that mean that apartment doors are trading for that, or single family homes really going to be trading for $600,000 or $650,000 5 years from now? And it just, that felt like a bit of a stretch to me. Whereas the deals I ended up working with them on in Dallas, they were buying these at probably about a 20% discount to what they were trading for last year before interest rates increased at a pretty low price per door standpoint. And that made me feel a lot more comfortable.
Yeah. Talk to me about debt. Trepp has reported that there's almost 50% of all commercial loans beginning in 2023 through 2027 come due and payable in that five-year window. When you're going into a deal, what types of questions, what are you paying attention to on the borrowing side?
Yeah, well, that's one of the things I think that has made the deals that I've looked at, either the most interesting ones have either been a case where there's assumable debt, so they're able to kind of bring across something in the threes and fours, or in Rise's case, they are always buying interest rate caps. So interest rate cap for your listeners is kind of when you sort of pay in advance, almost like paying points on a personal mortgage that you have for your personal home, where you're kind of paying down what the interest rate is going to be. And those used to be pretty inexpensive when rates were low. Now they're a lot of money. I think on these buildings in Dallas that we bought with Rise, I think there was well over $1 million to purchase this interest rate cap. So you got to raise a lot of additional capital for investors to buy this, but it does protect the downside, where you kind of know that this 3 or 5 year period, you've got a fixed interest rate. So I think that is something that also made investors feel comfortable that we weren't going to get, you know, capital call down the road, or be, if interest rates don't come down, there could be issues in terms of how we're going to be able to sell this property down the road. So there's pros and cons. I think different operators look at fixed debt versus floating rate debt differently. They've kind of chosen to just buy interest rate caps on all their deals to eliminate that from the equation.
Sure. Yeah. On a forward-looking basis, as you think forward and go, interest rates are here, there's a lot of debt coming due at 3% and 4%. And if you're going to go back on today, and certainly in, if you got a Fannie Freddie product on the multifamily side, you could be in the sixes, I suspect. Mm-hmm. But a lot of other asset classes, you're at 7 or 8 with it at least. What do you think that does from an operator standpoint, a level of distress or challenge, and how does it impact your decision-making looking forward for any opportunities that you're seeing?
Yeah, well, I think the pricing has to make sense in this interest rate environment. And that's what I liked about these couple of deals that I invested in Dallas this year. When interest rates first increased, there was still this big gap between what buyers could buy for in terms of numbers that made sense with higher interest rate and sellers that were still kind of living in the lower interest rate environment from a mindset standpoint. So in some cases, that gap is closing because if somebody needs to sell, they kind of meet current market expectations. Right. And other times they're selling just because they're just flat out distressed and they have to sell. So I think it's kind of understanding the story behind the deal and making sure that the pricing that you're getting for those makes sense and is going to kind of be something that will hold in a good market like a Dallas, for example.
What are you most excited about as you look forward into a year from now?
I think that there's still going to be good deals in the right market. So I think it's working with operators who are connected, who have good relationships with brokers, who are the kind of operators that the brokers come to, who they have confidence that can close. And that's the biggest thing too, is operators that can get financing if necessary, can also raise capital to be able to close. Those are the operators that are going to get access to the better deals.
Yeah. I want to move on to the final segment, what I call the final four. What do you think holds most passive investors back from hitting their personal next level, whatever that happens to be?
I think it's kind of just fear of the unknown. I think most people kind of grow up investing in stocks, bonds, mutual funds, and might a stock that they own drop 20 or 30%. They just kind of go, okay, well, that's just what happens in the real estate space. Something similar might happen in real estate where a distribution might get paused, or there might be a capital call potentially. And that just makes people uncomfortable. It makes them freak out. They're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to lose all my money. I can't just hit the sell button on my E-Trade account and get out. So I think some of it is that fear of what might happen after doing a lot of investing in stocks and bonds and mutual funds and being in working for a can't miss Silicon Valley startup, ended up going belly up. I still think that real estate is the best, most solid investment. So I think for a lot of passive investors, it's just kind of getting over that hump of doing all the research you can, talking to different operators, asking a lot of good questions, and then actually just making the investment.
I'm going to ask you another question. It's not in my final four, but I'm going to ask you this because you spurred a thought. How many passive investors that you know, how many only ever have invested or only end up, they invest once passively and they stop? A few?
Let me see. I think of my investor group, I'd say probably about a quarter of them, because I think a lot of my investors were people that I worked with who were just stock market investors, and they've taken the plunge and now they're kind of going to wait and see. Like, okay, I invested in 1 year deals or 2 year deals. Now I'm going to kind of like see how those work out.
Where I was going with that, that means 75% have invested in multiple times. So
yes.
That's been my experience as well. Mm-hmm. Once you get in, you get comfortable with it. If you've never done it, now you're in and you're like, okay, this is the landscape. This is the world.
Yep.
Yeah. The stock market can stay where it is.
Yeah, exactly.
The different avenue. Yeah. What are you passionate about outside of real estate?
Let me see. Yeah, I love the outdoors. I love hiking. My wife and I just spent a week up in Lake Tahoe last month and just spent some time on the lake and a ton of time in the mountains hiking around outside.
Beautiful. Favorite book?
Favorite book. The first book that I read that really kind of got the wheels turning on real estate was a book called Equity Happens by Robert Helms and Russell Gray, the real estate guys.
Yeah,
they used to actually live in the Bay Area,
right?
Pretty close to me as well. So I used to go to some of their local meetups. I was a longtime listener to their podcast. And yeah, this Equity Happens book is just kind of a great storytelling type book about how you can build wealth through equity.
Your favorite way to make an impact in the community?
Let me see. I think one of the things I regularly volunteer for is with Second Harvest Food Bank, doing food delivery for them. And yeah, there's this huge need where people are struggling and don't have enough food. And some people can actually make it to some of the place to pick up food. Other people can't. So pretty often I'll go to the food bank, pick up 5-6 grocery loads of food and take those around the community. So that's one of the things I really love to do.
Great. The Maverick Vault, it's a collection of resources available to you, our listeners, completely free. And Todd, I understand you're making a contribution to the vault. Tell us a little about it.
Yeah. So I was really fortunate enough to co-author this book called Success Habits of Superachievers with 80 different authors, with kind of people mostly in the personal development space. So Brian Tracy, Darren Hardy, Les Brown. And I have a copy of the ebook available on my website. So if you just go to blueelminvestments.com and there's a link there where you can download the ebook.
Terrific. Todd, this has been a wonderful conversation. Thanks so much for being here today. For people, they want to find you, they want to follow you, they want to connect with you. Where should they go? What should they do?
Yeah, they can shoot me an email, Todd, T-O-D-D, at blueelminvestments.com, or go to that Blue Elm Investments website, sign up for my investor club. I've got regular newsletters I send out. And if we have a conversation, then we can talk about giving access to some of the upcoming investment opportunities I'll have.
Terrific. Todd, thanks so much for the time.
Great. Thanks, Neil.
To our listeners, pat yourself on the back. You guys have made it to the end of the show, and most people never finish what they start. If you receive value from today's show, be sure to share it on LinkedIn, your Facebook page, or your social media platform of choice. Subscribe to never miss a valuable episode in the future. And if you found value in today's episode, give us a thumbs up with a positive review. If there's a particular topic you'd like to hear about, well, I want to hear from you. Shoot me a message on LinkedIn. The link to my profile is below in the show notes. You can connect with me there for more valuable content.